Hello and welcome to the Beacon Group's noon meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Kim and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. A preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of AA. We are all and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and have had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, and are willing to sponsor, also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also, in the night, you find our AA quote of the day. The quotes will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share 30 minutes on the step of the day, which I will time. Then we split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And can I have a volunteer to read the 12 steps? Done.
Yeah, I'll do it. You put them on the screen.
Yeah, give me 1 second.
I've got the book here. Shall I read it out of the book?
Got it right here for you, John. You're all set. Can you see him?
No. Can now. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic. You might want to bring that down a little bit. 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol as our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made the decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made lists of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thanks so much, John. So today we were here a talk on step two. Step two is came to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore sanity. And please give us a warm welcome to Bob N. from Boston, Massachusetts. Oh, you're muted, Bob.
Okay, maybe I double muted. Okay, I'm open now, it looks like. All right, hi everybody, my name is Bob, I'm an alcoholic. And I've been invited here to speak by Sunny, actually, I think through Deb. And it's an honor to be here. I am an alcoholic and I am in recovery. She suggested, which I think I'll do, is take, since it's half an hour, take like 15 minutes on my story, then 15 minutes on the second step. And luckily I did read the second step out of the 12 and 12. And then I looked up my big book notes and read the second step out of the big book. That one's always been a little unclear to me in the big book, but they did point out where you take step two in the book, leaving it a power greater than yourself. And this is powerful stuff. You know, they spend a lot of time on step one in the book, in the big book, and we are powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. And that's a very powerful statement. So I guess my story started, I am from Boston, and I'm in Stoughton, Mass, right in Westwood, but I think I'll start the other way around. I grew up in the suburbs. My dad was a Sicilian. It's kind of interesting, you know, like his mother and father came over from Italy, specifically Sicily, I think in the 1920s, 18, something like that, you know, the teens or 20s. And my grandmother on my dad's side could not read or write. And my grandfather was, I guess he went to school through like the fifth grade. And then, so he could read and write some, but you know, it was a different era then. And then my dad ended up through the whole nature versus nurture thing. I'm kind of a believer in a lot of ways on nurture and circumstances that, you know, there are circumstances that bring out what's good in us, what's capable in us. And sometimes they got married then. My dad's side was from Lawrence. My mother's side was from Lowell. You know, she was a cloud and she came over to New Brunswick and then came down, became a nurse at Lowell, in Lowell. And she met my granddad. I'm not sure where exactly, but he was an Englishman. And he was not a published writer, but he attempted to be published. I guess he became close. So, you know, on my mom's side, I got the, which I think I love more in a way of the literature. I love words in particular. And so I try to be true to my words. That to me, I've learned that throughout my life, but in leading a spiritual life and being in recovery, I do make my best effort to, that's interesting, Tyler. Okay, I guess one of the ways I do that, I'm giving this as a suggestion maybe, is don't talk so big, you know? People say a lot of things very quickly. No, geez, I feel like I'm in my resentments, but you know, it's easy to talk, but you know, like I try to be careful when I say things. If I promise to be somewhere or, you know, say I'm gonna be somewhere, I do like to keep that. I was born in 1956. And when I was in high school, it was the 1970s, I guess, really. I probably came into high school, I think I went about 1970 because I graduated in 74 and just barely in a way. Most of the things, I'm not gonna get into, you know, I don't know what people's policy on drugs, but you know, but I ended up really being, a stolen alcoholic, but it's a part of my story the way. And so that was a big thing that was going on at the time, you know, alcohol and drugs. And I was smoking marijuana, LSD, you know, when it was available and all that. And, you know, drinking was always a big problem on my dad's side. And so it might have been the family. I think my dad was an adult child and it feels like it felt pretty well. But I think what I always come out of this thing with this, that I was, you know, so the things were really happening at that time. My story seems to be, that I failed to launch it really to get started. So in a way, I don't identify as much with people saying they lost a lot of things, meaning like I didn't get life and go to school. I never finished school. I did go and I got experience from that, but I never finished. And I used it to, you know, for my career. So whenever really fully, I was still living at home, you know, like at 28, which I guess says something. So I guess I'm going to say in a nutshell, they say around here with premeditated resentments and a lot of expectations, because I was never really told me to directly, but I felt like he was, you know, like I said, he went to MIT, graduated, he was an engineer, and then he became, he took on the lead, I guess he worked at the workshop, the lab with Dr. Edwin Land, was the, it was his lab, and he was a genius, Dr. Edwin Land, and he made the first or the second instant camera, the Polaroid, you know. And I got to laugh, you know, God, I'm 66 and I never thought I'd be old or something. I don't know, in a way, when you're young, you don't envision it. And now I'm telling stories like back in the day, you know, so this is back when they had, it was a huge deal to get an instant picture right in front of your face. Nowadays I have iPhone and my God, you got the world at your tips. It's unbelievable how far we've come or whatever. That's just the technical advances and how things have changed. And, but, you know, so here I was, and then I'm getting the influence of the, you know, the hippies and the 70s, and I'm drinking and getting confused at school in a sense that, you know, wasn't really totally connecting. You know, I always had a love of reading, like I say. I always had a, I feel like I always had a spiritual side. And, you know, that was kind of what the 70s, you know, at that time were about in a way. And what I take out of that, that time frame in the 70s was that we were kind of a lot of anti-establishment consultants. I kind of like that in a way, anti, oh, I don't know how to explain that. Let me just say anti those of AA. You know, at the same time, we are in the norm, you know, like that brings us back to the mainstream in many ways. But spiritually, we're not really of the world. We're not really, I take AA and the 12-step material stuff and things like that much more loosely. You don't base your life on that. But so that was good. But also there was an optimism, there was a hope. And so I think in a way, even though I've gotten jaded in some ways, but I feel like there was an optimism at that time and thinking you could change the world and things could be wonderful. And what I've learned out of that is AA's taught me so strongly, like this one of my favorite, well, perhaps my favorite poet. I'm not big on poetry that much, but Rumi said I was clever. I used to be clever, so I wanted to change the world. And then I became older and wiser. And I learned that I want to change my, you know, I want to change myself. It's just a version of the Serenity Prayer. So my revolution is not in the outside world. My revolution is the inside world. That's, they speak about that in literature too. We have a revolutionary, very heavily. I was in Boston. I dropped out of school. That was a, you know, really bad experience in many ways. You know, I went to Boston University and I was drinking heavily. There was a storm of 78 at the time and whatever, but I got a few A's there and I got some encouragement, but I was really immature and I ended up flunking out of school. But I did go back to Northeastern University and Northeastern was good. They had a co-op position. I had a co-op student, a co-op status there. So I got, you know, which I'm retired now, but you know, it's in the computer programming field, information technology, whatever you want to call it. Actually, I first came around before things really got going. And when I worked at Northeastern, they had these punch out cards like crazy it was back then, but I did get experience. I worked at Honeywell and, Bill Ricca, and then I worked, ended up, well, anyhow, I got, you know, I lost my position in the, well, I got kicked out of school, actually, and I got kicked out of my house, you know, because I was running around, or I'll summarize my drinking this way. I definitely drank alcohol, drank at times, I drank at the blackouts. I spent a lot of time down the combat zone, Boston's famous, infamous combat zone. So, you know, it's not really, I mean, there was some excitement in it somewhat, but, you know, event life, and then I'm running around down there and that was kind of crazy. And people are trying to hustle and they're hustling you, you know, if you're down there. So, you know, just lonely sitting in bars, like, you know, looking for, I don't know what I was looking for. I was trying to just, you know, pass, I don't know what I was looking for exactly, but, you know, just trying to pass the time and fill a need. So my, like I said, my family, I'd had a bad event, a couple of bad events. I'm not sure what happened, but I remember my dad came down one day and I had a really bad nightmare that night, but he, you know, kicked me out of the house and I was 28. So it seemed, you know, crazy at the time, and it seemed like, oh my God, this is horrible. But I mean, he had every right to do it. It seemed like it came out of, not out of nowhere, but it came out of, it was kind of abrupt, you know. And so then I moved into Boston. I got in a problem with a friend of mine, and he was kind of, I'd say, an alcoholic. You know, he drank very, very heavily too. And we moved in together to a place in Brighton. And I was supposed to complete my school. That's what I think I was mad at my father for, because I wasn't able to complete my schooling. And when I moved in with this other guy, I had borrowed like $3,000, something like that, you know, to go to Northeastern. And I didn't go. And I had this money in my pocket. So I used it to pay for the, you know, the apartment. And I also used it to, you know, have extra money. So I guess this guy borrowed money from me. So I was able to live there, you know, with no money and no job for a while. And that's when my drinking, I had already been progressing very heavily, but that's when it really took off. And I had periods when I was drinking around the clock. I woke up drunk, you know, at one point I got robbed. People I met downtown Boston came back and they, you know, woke up in the morning and they had taken money out of my account. I remember making a phone call and finding out they had taken money out of my account. I don't know how much it was. I forget exactly, but, you know, that was kind of horrifying. And here I am looking at my life. I'm not working and I'm feeling like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And I remember, I don't even know how I got this job when I think about it. But for some reason, I guess I worked security at some point. So now here I am, a college student looking to be in computer science. But I ended up getting a job in as a security guard. It was actually an interesting situation in a way, well, because it plays into my story. So I think the name was Donald Trump. I shouldn't even say the name. It doesn't really matter. Anyhow, I was working there and we'd work the 3 to 11 shift. So the people would be with us from 9 to 5, the office workers. And it was an audio surveillance place. So you would, you know, you'd hear things, you'd hear break-ins. And maybe once or twice a night or something would happen. So we're like from, you know, time with nothing happening. And so I got talking to this woman and lo and behold, this woman is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she invited me to a few meetings. And I went to these meetings and I don't think she showed up at some of them that she invited me to. But when you go to AA, it has a tendency to grab your attention because, you know, my life is out of control. I'm not sure if I'm going to, you know, what's happening and where's the way I'm going to go. And so what actually ended up happening, you know, through a series of events, I guess you can call them coincidences, but, you know, as they say, God works anonymously through coincidences. I ended up getting a job back in my field. I was at Blue Cross Blue Shield. And I knew at this time that, you know, if I didn't take advantage of this, I might never get this opportunity again. And so I remember going down to combat zone. I met a woman down there that I think was 1985. And she met me and said, let's get together later on. And then I went and I didn't see her. So then Sunday I went back down there and I spoke to her. She said, you know, I said, what happened to you last night? She said, it's all about the money. And that was my moment of truth. I came out of there. I went to a payphone. I called Central Service. I found out where a meeting was. I went to a meeting in Cambridge. And honestly, I have not looked back since. And I dove into AA with a lot of enthusiasm. I got a year of sobriety and my family came to celebrate, you know, and it was wonderful. You know, I think I didn't realize at the time how much of an inside job it was. And also at the time, so when people say the good old days, I kind of question that, not entirely, but, you know, that always seems nice when you look back at some of the things you did. And AA is always strong to a certain extent in any area. There's some strong people, strong messages. But we didn't have the benefit of the big book. People were not doing the work out of the big book. So I did do a few AWOLs, but then I dropped out of one because they were saying, like one guy was leading it, and he didn't know the difference between atheist and agnostic. And I don't know. I just didn't really quite get with it. So I was really enthusiastic and I definitely I ended up, you know, doing the typical thing at that time, which a lot of us still do. And I've kind of fallen back somewhat into that is you don't drink, go to meetings, ask for help, get a sponsor and join a group. And those are all wonderful, wonderful suggestions. And so, you know, I ended up, I started taking care of the outside things. It was very exciting. I ended up joining the group Sugar Hill. I played softball for them. I met a woman in the program and we ended up getting married. We're still married to this day. I had a baby. No, that sounds weird. My wife had a baby in 89. I think I was 4 years sober. I met her and I had 2 years sober and she was newly sober. But 30 days or something, she actually had one drink and then came back and has never gone out to drink again. And that was really wonderful. But then what happened was, from my standpoint, she ended up really getting into, stopped going to meetings and getting into gambling pretty heavily. And we ended up declaring bankruptcy and I got all messed up. And I met a guy from Patrick from the big book had just come into Boston that, you know, in like 19, I don't know when it was, I'm not sure, it was like about 10 years sober. And he ended up taking me through the big book. And, you know, unfortunately, it took me forever to do it, a really long time. And I haven't followed up on it the way I would like to, although I've been heavily influenced and I love the book. I think I've done a lot of stuff with just, you know, staying sober, looking at myself, you know, doing a lot of inventory, but I haven't followed the, you know, like carrying it on the way I would like to have, you know. But I do, I'm very familiar with it. And I know I live my life based on spiritual principles. Meaning, I think in a lot of ways, I'm going to get to the second step. I'll kind of run off on that as I'm wrapping up here with 7 minutes. You know, you're looking at yourself, always looking at yourself, trying to not blame others, you know, not stand resentment. The big book talks a lot about, I mean, the inventory is kind of based on resentment. And I find that it's a wonderful, like, red flag when something's wrong. And so, you know, I've come to appreciate how important that is. But I just read the second step out of the 12 and 12. Like I said earlier, then I read the big book. And the big book, they talk about, you know, believing in the power greater than yourself and a spiritual experience. And I think that is the key thing. Eventually, I believe for myself, I've kept my spiritual enthusiasm up the whole time I've been in recovery. I've never lost, you know, sense of that. And it's, you know, willing to deepen your spirituality, increasing your prayer and meditation. But I'm sorry, this is talking about, you know, being restored to sanity. They talk a lot, might have been 12 and 12, about seeing people that are in recovery. And that to me is very, you know, like how that impresses us and how we see the solution through other people. I really believe, like, I've done a lot of looking at spiritual practices and different traditions, and I've fallen into a specific tradition, which I don't feel like sharing at this point. But it's, I fell into the spiritual aspect. It's a whole big thing, but the spiritual aspect within a particular religion. And I see it so powerful that, you know, and they mention that in the book, you know, not to get it confused with religion, but it's a spiritual program, which means getting honest, means trusting God, you know, but I've seen the insanity by being around, I'm 38 years sober, and I've never stopped going to AA. I've always been involved. Right now I'm a treasurer of a group and heavily involved with the group and always been around trying to help people as best I can and staying sober myself and all that. But the insanity is unbelievable. I think for me, what happened was that I did not realize fully that how much of an inside job it is, you know, because I was such failure to launch that just, you know, maintaining a job in a professional environment was huge for me. I got a promotion. I did pretty well. Being married was huge for me. I never really had relationships, you know, living outside my house, having my own place, living at home with my parents was huge for me. Being a parent, that was unbelievable. It's something I've always wanted. And thank God my daughter is, you know, we're really close today, a gift of sobriety. But I watch it and just the insidiousness, this disease is so insidious. And I find, even though I'm very active in my program, and like I said, I think I need to, as I admitted, so to speak, I need to keep my spirituality deeper. And I actually got somebody who just recently, it's funny how that things go. He asked me to help him out with the steps. And he just asked me yesterday, a few other people asked me too, and we haven't got around to doing very much yet, but you know, reading the book leads me to believe that's, you know, that is where it's at, you know. But the insanity I witnessed with people getting sobriety, then, you know, putting other things first and it slips away. The insanity of putting, what is it they say in AA? Whatever you put before sobriety, you can lose, you know, sobriety loses its priority, then the other things, don't let the things AA gives you take you out of AA. That's the one I was looking for. And I've seen that happen. But what I also see is that by continuing to stay involved in life, you know, doing prayer and meditation, helping others, being responsible, being as honest as I can be, trying to always look at my side of things, that I have been restored to sanity in a large way. My problem now seems to be more, and I got to be careful when I say this because it is looking at yourself, but I seem like I'm caught up in a lot of, at times, other people's insanity. Like, I don't cause problems directly, but I do get caught up in other people's stuff. And there's a lot of issues, like at home, where, you know, I'm in heavily in recovery, and my wife is really, really backed off, and, you know, very, very strongly, and still, you know, whatever. And that's a huge challenge. I don't know what to do about it right now. I'm just, you know, I've hung in there. Things are slowly getting better since I had a nervous breakdown when we had bankruptcy and all that. But it's slowly gotten better ever since then. But I was talking to somebody last night. She's in Al-Anon as well as AA. And I was saying, like, right now I was kind of struggling because I'm in the sense of my group. You know, the group is a very loving, you know, tolerant group. But it doesn't focus as directly on the steps. And I'm so caught up in it. You know, it's kind of, we have one guy who's like really super angry. You know, when I'm kind of the lead person in the group, so it kind of messes things up. What was I trying to get with that? Oh, so I was talking to this woman in Al-Anon yesterday, and I said, you know, we were doing commitments and stuff, and I was, since we don't have a bookie right now, I would step in and I'd take the lead on commitments, and there was more work, and I said, you know, it's not, and I looked at myself, and I said, why don't I just back off? And as I backed off, I found like other people stepped up. And so I think I was following that principle of always looking at yourself, always looking for your part. And I discovered, you know, why just like I'm bringing things on myself without realizing it. So, you know, that's they talk a lot in the big book about finding, I mean, in the big book step studies about finding patterns in your sobriety and patterns of behavior and breaking them. So, you know, it is about me. And, you know, I feel like I did a lot to correct that. And so right now I also had a huge thing happen with my health. And what's I going to say? I got 1 minute. I'll wrap this up. It's really been amazing. I had sleep apnea. I was diagnosed with that. So I really was, you know, really suffering from lack of sleep. And I got a CPAP machine and that's really gotten better. So I have a lot of hope right now. You know, that's, I feel like that thing in the book, one of the 12 and 12, I think the lung, the guy with the electric, that's something to do with the lung, you know, the electricity feeds the lung and he needs it to survive. And I actually feel like I need mine to survive too, because if I kept doing it, it would just be terrible, the health results. But I'm getting a newfound, you know, healthiness, and that's a wonderful thing. So, you know, I love being involved in my life, you know, trying to serve God, trying to be an AA, trying to stick it out. It's not that easy to stick out. And I'm glad that I've chosen as best I can a spiritual life and continue to do that. So thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be of service for this group. And I look forward to the breakout rooms and whatever we do now. So thank you, everybody. Thanks so much. I love you all.